following program is brought to you by your friends at Podcast One.
And welcome to Corolla Classics for September 15th, 2019, Sunday show. We've got a great show for you today. My name's Chris Loxamana, the executive producer of the Adam Corolla Show. And with me is Corolla archivist, superfan Giovanni.
Hey, everybody. We got a live one today.
And those just tuning in, this is the show we're going to highlight the greatest moments of the Adam Corolla Show. There's so many. So make sure to tune in every week to hear what we got for you. This first clip features a guy who's been on the Corolla Show many, many times. And this is just the 11th episode of the podcast ever. Doug Benson joined Adam.
In 2009, March of 2009, Doug, who was a frequent radio show guest, and he started his rapport on the radio show. He wasn't a Loveline guy. And then he moved over to the podcast. This is the 11th episode, recorded from Adam's home. Check it out.
Absolutely. And, you know, I do love movies. I love making fun of crappy movies more than I really love good movies. But, for instance, I was just watching No Country for Old Men last night, and I thought, why wasn't everyone in this movie nominated? I mean,
Why didn't it win everything?
I know Javier Bardem was, but not only was the sheriff great, of course, Tommy Lee Jones, but the guy who played his deputy was great.
Yeah, that guy's really good. That's the guy that played two different parts on Deadwood, and nobody knows that it was the same guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're always surprised when I say that, because he's really a great actor.
Tommy Lee Jones could have got a nod for that. I don't know if he won anything or got anything for that, but his deputy could have gotten something for that. Brolin got
most of the action from the Critics Awards, and then he was nominated for the Oscar, I think, but then didn't win.
And watched Vicky Cristina Barcelona last night and thought, by the way, Javier Bardem should get some sort of range award just for being the super hunky Spaniard.
For being in both of those movies,
and being in both those movies with the crazy haircut, serial killer with the thing that puts out cows.
Yeah.
I mean, that is range.
He's good.
And goddamn, was that movie good.
He's played paralyzed characters. He's played dudes that walk around. He's really got the range.
Well, yeah, I actually thought No Country for Old Men was probably better than any of the Best Picture movies this year. I don't know what your feeling was on that.
I agree with that.
Well, we got some, we can talk some movies. We can talk just about anything. Eventually, we're going to open it up so we can take your phone calls as well. But again, this is all just technology, and we're trying to keep up with everyone. One thing I wanted to talk about, I was up here Friday night. I was in a horrible mood on Friday. And I was up here on Friday night, and I was watching my kids play right where we're sitting in this room. And they had a whole, you know, as a parent, well, as a human being, you don't realize how much shit there is for kids that would piss you off, except for you don't have any kids, so it flies right under your radar and you never notice it. But when you become an adult and you start watching some of the horrible cartoons like Dragon Tales or Caillou or some of this bullshit, or you start seeing some of the toys or just some of the books that are horrible, horribly written and horribly illustrated, you start getting angry, especially as somebody who has a couple creative brain cells to rub together, you get angry at these things. This was the world's worst idea. I was up here. It was just after dinner. Dinner's basically you beg your kids to eat. The beginning part of your life, people beg you to eat. And then the second part of your life, they beg you not to eat. And then at a certain point, they beg you to eat again, and then you die.
Yeah, it's like Benjamin Button.
It really is, except for at a buffet. First part of your life, everyone going, please eat, please eat, have some of this, come on. Second part of your life is, really, do you need more? You went to the rib buffet three times already, Cousin Sal. You need me to go up there and take it easy, buddy. Your heart's going to explode. Then you get to the very end of your life where someone goes, just have another sip of Ensure, and then you die. I've just figured out it's the sort of trilogy of life. But the beginning part of the kids is you beg them to eat. And you start off with these noble intentions. Like, you know what? They're only going to eat whole grains. And they're only going to eat organic. and they're only going to, and eventually just, it gets down to just eat another fucking corn dog for daddy, please. just you can have something coursing through your veins, because the kids, all they want is grease, and all they want is crap, and all they want to do is dip everything in ketchup. But I spent that evening trying to get them to eat the broccoli and the asparagus and all that crap. Then we go upstairs, and I notice they're playing. And what they're playing with is toy food. And they have the plastic broccoli, and they have the plastic carrots, and they have little plastic hot dogs. And they also have, like, the plastic ice cream cone that they're both sharing. They're both taking a lick and go, eh, here's Sonny. And I'm watching it, and I'm thinking, that came off a container ship that left Korea 7 years ago. I'm sure it's covered in melamine. I'm sure it's covered in lead-based paint. And so at a certain point, when my son is trying to power down this piece of broccoli that's made of plastic, I'm slapping it out of his mouth going, no, no, you don't eat the fake broccoli. And then I realized, what kind of fucking retarded message is this? Because 20 minutes ago, I'm begging him, like, I will blow you if you eat your broccoli flour. Now I've slapped it out of your hands. He's got to be thinking, what the fuck? And then I realize, what kind of maniac makes plastic food for kids? Like, when you're a kid, the biggest hazard you have growing up is choking on something. You want to make little miniature hot dogs that can get lodged in windpipes? Like, whose fucking plan was this?
There's some dangerous toys out there and some messed up ones for their tiny little minds.
Why don't they just make little roofie bottles or little bongs or little spike strips, like, for their big wheels? Like, really? Like, I thought those fake cigarettes were bad when we were kids. I can't imagine it. My son was lying on his back. He had one of these little, fake hot dog. First off, it seems very, very homoerotic. But secondly, it's going to get lodged in his windpipe. It's weird to tell him not to eat something that he was eating 10 minutes earlier. And then I launch into this tirade, and I said, what kind of fucking maniac? Who brought this shit into the house? What the hell were you? I started pointing my finger. What the hell were you doing bringing this shit? Weren't you thinking? She said it was a gift. I said, what the fuck kind of maniac would buy this of your sister? I said, oh, all right. Well, that just came into focus. Remember the fake cigarettes and the near beer?
Mm-hmm.
Do you, or are you just agreeing with me, Doug?
No, I do remember. You mean the candy cigarettes?
Yeah.
Yeah, those were, like, pretty tasty.
And you'd blow good candy. You'd blow little talcum powder out or little powdered sugar out, and then you'd grab a near beer. It's kind of it's an interesting message, like, for a 9-year-old to head down to a liquor store.
Yeah, it's grab the whole starter kit thing.
I'm grab a fake beer, and I'm going to grab some fake cigarettes, and then Hey, Tani, you want to play? Yeah, you want to play my fake old lady, and I'll pretend to beat the crap out of you after I've had too many near beers.
Which is worse for you, think? If you ate 20 or 30 of those candies every day, or if you smoke cigarettes?
That's a good point. I suppose if you had like a 3-pack a day habit,
yeah,
if
yeah.
you ate the fake cigarettes.
Yeah, it's like eating chalk, those things.
I know. That had to be a weird, there's certain things, like, I really wish I could have gone back. I know it was a madman mentality back then, but I would love to have been a fly on the wall for, we always laugh about for the pitch for Hogan's Heroes or the Flying Nun or something like that. You know, like she's a nun that flies? Yeah. Oh, because she's powered by God? No, the wind. The wind? I mean, she flies because she's a magic nun? No, she put too much starch in her habit.
She's aerodynamic.
Yeah, it's formed a canard. And when the wind blows,
she never thinks of taking the hat off when she doesn't feel like flying.
Not to mention that, the hat
she can't. She's a nun. She can't take it off.
Well, anyone who's ever worn a baseball hat and a convertible realizes the hat will come off your head. You don't lift out of the car with it.
Well, it's wrapped under her chin, like a bandage, those crazy nun hats.
It just sat on top of her head, and it's like she put too much starch in it, and it made an airfoil.
The Wright brothers did a lot of their early work with nun hats.
The other thing that's weird about it is it never helps solve anything. Like, if she was a superhero who could actually fly and, you know...
Yeah, she never got somewhere quickly because of it.
No.
She always just would get blown away from
situations.
She just
kind of hovered in the air over Carlos, the millionaire bachelor.
It was embarrassing. Yeah. It was a superhero with an embarrassing skill.
And it's like, where does this take place? San Juan, Puerto Rico? I'm in. Let's see. So what happens? Well, remember the chick who used to play Gidget? Yeah. She plays a nun who flies in Puerto Rico. Awesome. Let's do it.
Yeah.
So the pitch. The pitch for the fake cigarettes had to be a weird... Like, there must have been some just candy manufacturer said, you know what? Enough with the gum, the taffy, and the chocolate. We got to start making cigarettes.
I just found
they
something
seem to
on
be
the internet.
Popular.
And in the 50s, they were actually in cahoots with the cigarette companies and making identical cigarette packages.
Mm.
So Salem, like, Winston,
so
Viceroy.
Was it the cigarette company's idea?
Probably.
Or the candy
that's my
company?
Guess.
Interesting. I mean, they sold. I remember buying them.
These Why haven't we been drummed over the head with truth commercials about this, though? You know, if the candy cigarettes came first.
Yeah, it's a good point. I feel like they would have glommed onto this, although they're gone now, so we don't have to worry about
it. No, they still make the candy cigarettes.
Oh, they do?
Yeah, but
not in this country.
Yeah.
Really?
You can get those, yes.
Oh yeah. It's just got
but
a
they don't
sillier
have the white
box,
paper.
I think.
They're called Victory instead of Viceroy and Kings instead of Winston and Roundup.
Wait a second. They're named after gay porn magazines? Number one. Number two. There's no 7-Eleven in North Hollywood that I can go into
no,
and buy a pack
special,
of those.
Special
this is an
like,
internet deal
yes,
here, right?
Yeah, if you went to like Oriental Trading Company
this
or
is definitely, this,
Lillian Vaughn or
this
whatever.
This smacks of the Orient.
Joints where they have a lot of weird candy, you know, like
yeah.
Oz or whatever.
But as a kid, I don't remember the Winston pack or the Viceroy pack. I remember like the fake kind of label pack going to Thrifty's and...
It never seemed like a real pack of cigarettes.
But look, these are photos from the 50s. Those are the candy packages there, Winston.
I do remember that. But on the other hand...
I wonder if the Salems had like a menthol kind of candy taste to it.
I don't know. I wonder if the black kids smoked them.
All right, that was Doug Benson in 2009 hanging out with Adam. Now he goes on to appear on a few more podcasts, mostly live podcasts, and we always play the... totally topical TiVo Trivia Tuesday game with him. He does love his movies. This next clip, this is from 2017.
Joel H. Cohen, Joe Kenda, Gina Grad, and Brian Bishop, Adam Carolla Show 2147. It's a listener request from SolidHex888 on Twitter. Even though I have the Carolla archives, I would still suggest the August 30th, 2017 show with Joe Ken interview for Carolla Classics. The archive he's referencing is Podcast One Premium, the home of all your favorite podcasts. If you need to find any of these clips we played today and want to hear the whole episode, that's where you do it. Sign up. If there's any you want us to play, let us know. We will play it.
All right, SolidHex888. Enjoy this one. 2017.
Joe Kenda.
Oh, and Sonny, you got Gary just brought in whatever...
Yes. Lynch's email?
Yeah, Lynch's email. It's just a quick observation on the two.
Yeah, that's what he said. In the course of studying, I dug out my old papers from Antioch and found my observation from my child development class I did on Sonny and Natalia when they were 16 months old. Simultaneously, it seems like a lifetime ago and yesterday. I write in the paper that when I said hi to Sonny, he ran and clung to Olga's leg. And then I meet Natalia and I wrote, quote, I saw right away and her father confirmed that she is the more curious and adventurous of the two, and tell a story about how she stole my pen and threw it over a railing.
Yeah, that's a very delightful thing for kids to do, is to snatch up things that you want and toss them.
That's fun.
Or places you can't get them.
Tessa's in that phase right
now. In that phase.
She has, who have a bowl of like toys, knickknacks, plastic things, you know, spoons and such on the table for when she sits and like eats. And her routine is grab a thing, throw it. Grab a thing, throw it.
Right.
One at a time. Not dump the thing over. Grab it, play with it, throw it.
Yeah.
You know, daddy's going after it at the end.
Yeah, we had a second story and a kind of a entry balcony, and she just chucks stuff right over top. Okay, so now they're no different now, and that's it. Like, I don't know what you want to do. This is why this entire, like, hey man, you're taking your sexual
societal leanings and you're grafting them onto Sonny and you're grafting them onto Natalia. How could you possibly do that? They are who they are almost from the time they're born on. So how is it that I could graft? By the way, I can't get them to shut the goddamn light in the bathroom. Do you think I'm going to graft anything onto them?
It's quite the opposite, too. It sounds like Natalia is the more, you associate that masculine energy extrovert with, like, mischievous, you know what I mean? Throwing things.
Yes.
And speaking of mischievous, which one snapped which one's goggles and made them cry?
Yeah, she gave it a slingshot. Although, the best, you're going to love it
she
when Tessa,
his bra.
Well, Tessa doesn't have anyone to maybe she'll have someone to argue with, but okay. The Charlie, recreations of what happened. Mm-hmm. Like, well, Sonny came up behind me, so I like reached back to like push him off, and then my hand got caught
tangled
in the
up.
Goggle, and then I may have pulled it and slingshot him in the face. And like this, I know exactly what happened. She went right after him. She grabbed his goggles. She doesn't like the fact that he wears goggles in the pool. Right. She thinks it's a puss move, so she wants to go make him pay a little bit.
Out.
She pulled it back and
passing
snapped
judgment.
It.
Yes.
Yeah. But in lieu of him ever wearing a jock strap, this is the best. This is the best she'll be able to do.
As good as we're gonna get.
It's as close as we're gonna get to the snap of the jock strap.
Sonny.
Yeah.
Googles.
Yeah,
Googles.
Googles.
It calls him Googles. And he won't go in with just Googles. And then at a certain point, he went full Cameron from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh no.
He went full float. He was on the I actually had a moment where he was on the Baja shelf, which is about a foot of water, and he's just on his belly, just spread out.
Catatonic.
Just laid out in that thing. And he was like, Natalia and I were like playing, but I would glance at him from time to time, like, is he breathing? What's he got? And then I pulled him back, and it was almost like I just fished his body out of the water.
Pardon my French, but you're an asshole.
All right, let's see. Got a question about 9/11.
Oh,
Robert, 35, North Hills, man. 170 degrees out there today. What's going on?
Hello, Professor Carolla. I wanted to ask you if perhaps you could join this movement. On there's a site called Architects and Engineers for 9/11, thetruth.org.
Yeah.
Catchy.
And there you can see that there are 2,907 architects and engineers that have signed this petition saying, listen, this didn't happen the way it happened. These are the intellectuals that are your people. Why have you not joined this crowd and take care of this situation? We can find out the truth. If you joined this organization, we find out the truth. You know,
yeah. The thing about the towers, it's all so perfect. Like, the things are made with big chunks of I-beam steel that have fire protective coating on it. So when you go like under a commercial building or the parking lot of a commercial building, if you ever see a ceiling tile pulled off in a commercial building, you see the I-beams, but it looks like a bunch of cottage cheese sprayed on it. That's for fire retardant because the steel will melt. The concussion from the plane hitting it knocked all that stuff off.
Sure,
that stuff.
Hard.
Yeah, it's like a hard frosting on a cupcake and you smack the thing and it cracks and it falls off. It's like a hard shell.
Right.
You hit it, it all fell, and it's, you know, 40 years old. You hit it, it all fell off. And then this Jet A fuel just starts coming out of these planes, which are filled with fuel, and they just keep burning and burning and burning. And the way those things went down and the timing and everything, it was all perfect. Like, they spend months trying to rig an old casino in Vegas and can't get it to drop straight down, like 10 stories. They forget about 100 plus stories. I mean, there's no other way that thing could have gone down. It's an insane thought. Now, look, there are times when you can kind of argue scientifically or from an engineering standpoint for what is. Like, you can go, well, all those I-beams have bolts and they have a shear rating of 5,000 pounds and the plane wouldn't have cut through the shear rating. Like, you can do all that and you can be like technically right, but we all saw what we saw and that's how it went down.
Yeah. And not only am I not an engineer, but I know nothing about anything that has to do with building. I happen to be, I guess it was about 20 blocks up and standing in our CEO's office, which was floor to ceiling windows, and physically saw the whole thing come down. And it was unbelievably terrifying and overwhelmingly sad, but it looks like what a building looks like when it comes down.
Yeah. And they came down, like the one that got hit first came down first, and the other one got hit. And they both came down, like sort of where the plane was is where they started to pancake, where the plane hit.
Lean and
crumble. It all made sense.
Yeah.
But do you believe it, Robert?
Well, I agree with you. I used to agree with you. But then when you go to this website, they point out that the government won't release the figures that they used in their computers, so that the rest of us can see. Okay, what were the
But the government not releasing stuff doesn't mean they're guilty about it. They have things that they choose to use as measuring sticks or what have you. It doesn't always mean there's something nefarious. And then also, we could have just planted WMDs somewhere in the desert and declared war if we wanted to. I guess the conspiracy is this is how we declare war, but we declare war all the time with much less than this. And my biggest argument is two towers. I would have simply said, like, if I was going to wire those towers up, I'd just be like, we don't need to do them both. One's enough to get us start a war. And then someone would have went, what about the Twin Towers? I'd be like, look, take down one, and it's half the work and half the chance of getting caught. Mm-hmm. Like, if that's the conspiracy.
Yeah, I think about it in those terms a lot when I hear these theories or the explanations or whatever. Question for you two. It's a ballpark number. What is the minimum number of people it would take to pull off a scheme like this?
And never tell anybody.
So just the number of people you would need. Just the number of people you need rigging.
Hundreds.
Yeah, it seems like a lot.
Yeah.
A few hundred at least. And they want to keep that a secret. Like, for example, a recent example, like, you know, the stuff with all the Russians and everything and the emails going back and forth. This is like six people who desperately want to keep that a secret and they can't do it. Like,
we can't keep anything secret.
That's wildly over the scope of possibility.
Gesticulating, man.
Pump. Getting crazy.
I agree with your point.
Good. Lieutenant Joe Kendis on line two. Lieutenant Joe?
Yes, sir.
Good to speak to you.
How are you?
I'm good. Homicide Hunter is the name of the show. Wednesdays, 9 p.m. on Discovery. I was watching it this morning.
That's great.
Really enjoying it. There's a
I'm
book.
I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah. The book is called I Will Find You, Solving Killer Cases from My Life Fighting Crime. So you can pre-order it now on Amazon. Go ahead and bookmark us and click through, and that's what we call win-win. So tell us a little about your history first, and then we'll get into the show.
I was born in a coal mining town outside of Pittsburgh. My family were coal miners. My grandfather was killed in a coal mine. I decided I want to be a mole in the ground, so I went to college. Working my way through college as a bartender, learned more in the bar than I ever learned in college.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And then I got married to my high school sweetheart and wanted to be a policeman, and here we are.
So she wanted you to be a policeman?
I did.
Oh,
not her.
Okay. So
she wanted me to stop being a policeman for quite a bit of it. But
you cleared 92% of your cases when the national average is between 58 and 62. Is that correct?
That is correct, yeah.
And so these were, when you say cleared, you were homicide detectives, so these are homicides?
Correct. These are people who got arrested for killing somebody, 92% of them.
How is your rate so much higher than the national average? And then I'd like to congratulate you, but I'd rather yell at them.
I understand. I'm not smarter than anybody else. I'm just more stubborn.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't give up.
And other folks aren't willing to plant evidence. That's where Lieutenant Joe goes.
Never done that.
No, I'm not saying you were. I'm saying
I did work one case for 9 years.
Oh my
wow.
God.
So
before I turned it.
Do you feel very connected to the victims?
I do. I considered the people in my jurisdiction, I considered my family. And if you hurt a member of my family, I'm going to hurt you.
I love that.
If you kill somebody, nobody gets to play God. You just don't get to do that.
No, I
will find you someday. I may not find you immediately, but I will find you.
Well, I like that attitude, and it does, you know, sometimes...
Taken four.
Sometimes when I see guys, like law enforcement, they're just sort of backed up the overpass, and they're just sitting there with the radar gun, I just think to myself, why did you get into this again? Like, this
well,
can't be.
The unfortunate fact of life of all police departments is we have to recruit our members from the ranks of the human race.
Yeah.
Which is always a problem. If we could just get those robots to work properly, we wouldn't have these people.
But I think I saw a Tom Cruise movie about that. It didn't work out.
Yeah, you did, as a matter of fact. I saw the same movie. But, yeah, of course. So, you know, people take the job for all kinds of reasons. They take it for the benefits. They take it for the days off. They take it for the permanency of the work. They take it for lots of reasons. I took it because I thought I was on a mission.
Yeah.
It wasn't a job to me. I didn't care if they paid me. My wife cared if they paid me, but I wasn't that interested. I just wanted to do something that I thought was important.
What are most murders, what percentage of murders, I'll just say the ones you handled, was there a connection to the victim by the murderer?
About 95% of the time there is a connection, only 5% of stranger killing.
Right.
The press makes a great deal about noise about serial killers, but they're a very rare beast.
No, I get it. My wife is like, don't let the kids walk alone to the Starbucks. They're going to get snatched up. And I'm like, sweetie, statistically, I'm going to kill them and then kill you and then commit suicide.
And you're going to kill you first, actually, because your wife is more at risk from you than she is from anybody else.
That's right.
We
have it on tape.
No, I mean, you're right. Statistically, I know. But so what happens is the gals sit home. They watch these shows about then the stranger blew into town and abducted the kids and murdered them. They're so scared about that. Meanwhile, it's the drunken guys passed out next to them. That's the guy who's going to pose the biggest threat. Yeah, that guy's
absolutely correct. Yeah.
So
people know each other by you know, the 95% number applies to every possibility of knowing someone.
Yeah.
It includes emotional involvement. It includes employment. It even includes criminal enterprise. You know, you're in the drug business, but you know each other. And, you know, you're not paying me, and you're supposed to pay me bang, bang, bang. So it's always about people you know. It is hardly ever about someone you don't know.
Is it? And it's weird. And I like to yell about the press all the time and their narratives that are here to scare everybody and make us think we're living in an evil society and a horrible society. This is a perfect example of that. The press never stops with that.
You have to remember that the press only has one interest, actually two. They're interested in blood and they're interested in failure. Mm. If it bleeds, it leads. And everything that fails is of interest to them.
Right.
The post office failed to do this. Your garbage man failed to empty the entire can. The government failed to do this. The police failed to do that.
So
that's all they talk about.
I know. I agree.
Everybody's dead. And if you're not dead, you're going to be dead shortly. We'll be right back after these messages, you're dead.
I agree. Every time there's a school shooting, Oprah would say, and if it can happen in Sandy Hook, or if it can happen in Columbine, it can happen anywhere. And then everyone watching goes, I live anywhere. Oh, my God, it could happen here.
Of course.
So what is the first thing you would do when you come across a body? Who is the first person you... First person, I guess, you look for is a person that had something to gain, an insurance policy or a partner
or
whatever.
Not particularly, no. What I'm interested in, the most interesting thing to me, when you discover what is known in the trade as HR, human remains, it's very cold. Where's the HR? It's in there. You know? I want to know about this person, the dead person. Tell me about them. Tell me everything about them. Where they work. Do they work? Where do they work? Where do they get their dry cleaning done? Where do they buy their gas? Where do they buy their groceries? Do they have a secret life? Are they homosexual? Are they bisexual? Do they buy and sell and use narcotics? Do they have a wife and a girlfriend too? What exactly are they up to in their lives that made them be like this? Because somewhere in that circle of people they know, someone they encountered made them look like this.
What percentage, in your experience, of people have that sort of secret life, so to speak? I mean, we all have our little secrets, but
everyone has little secrets, but not that many people have dangerous secrets.
Right. But
they don't have habits that can get them killed.
In terms of your homicide victims, and I'm guessing it's a self-selecting group, because if it's a homicide, you're investigating, then people have more secrets.
A few ways you can avoid being the victim of violent crime. Very simple. No matter where I don't care if you live in the worst neighborhood in Houston or you live in the middle of Iowa, there are some things you can avoid that will prevent you, most likely, from being the victim of violence. Stay at a bar at closing time. Nothing good happens after midnight. Do not buy, use, or sell narcotics, or associate with those who do. And try to marry well. Don't marry a psychotic. The odds of you being the victim of violent crime are tiny.
Right.
You do those other things, or you do them in combination, and they are huge.
It's so weird that as much as we like to focus on the sort of outlier stuff, whether it's being a victim of violent crime or having a successful career, it's pretty much don't have kids until you get married, focus on your career, get married early and stay with that person, then start your career, then start family. It's a really simple little recipe book that has one page on it for, like, how do you make more money? How do you stay alive? There are pretty basic stuff that we never really focus on because we like to talk about everything else. Like, she was just, it was noon and she was leaving the Costco and she was attacked by, I saw that movie, Cobra. They're groups of roving killers that just go out and they meet in an empty swimming pool.
I never encountered any of those people, by the way.
But, I don't think statistically you would. It's just the husband or the business partner.
Well, it's not to the press, it's not sexy enough
right.
to talk about reality. They have to make it sound more bizarre because that's going to make you watch. They like to paint themselves as guardians of the public interest, but in reality, they're a business.
Yeah.
And the more you watch, the more they charge for advertising. That's how it works.
And the more fearful, the more you watch.
Of course. Oh, we love that.
So your most gruesome case, is that Herta Caraway?
The most gruesome was every one of them. Okay? They were.
They're all the most?
Violent death is violent death.
Were they all, were there any where you had to kind of go, wait a minute, I don't think this person fell off a ladder. I think somebody pushed him off a ladder.
Sure. Yeah, there are some of those, of course. Some. There are also people that try to stage a murder to look like a suicide. They don't do a very good job, but they try that.
Yeah, what
people,
is...
People get very emotional when they commit this crime, and as a result, they make mistakes. Mm. I'm a professional. I don't get emotional.
So what
I'm able to see those mistakes rather easily. You know?
How... Is it all just nuts and bolts, repetition... Or do you get feelings about things when you see a crime scene?
Well, no, you don't get feelings. I don't believe in the gut feelings. I never believed in any of that. I just never believed in it. I think the mistake that some policemen all over the world, not just in the United States, but they develop a theory of the case on the way to the crime scene.
Right.
And they beat up the facts until it meets their theory. I never did that. I let the facts drive the theory. I don't know what happened here. I just got here. I've been here for 30 seconds, and here is this dead person. Somebody made them that way, so now we have to decide why would anybody want to do that. And in order to decide why, we must first know who this victim is. What would this victim do to create a why in their life? Now, why is only interesting to me until I develop the rest of it. After I find out who, what, where, when, and how, I don't care about why anymore. Why is important to me if it leads to a suspect. The why question is a jury question. They get to decide what they want to do about it.
Well, you bring up an interesting point that I try to tell people all the time, just sort of in life, which is treat your life, I talk about it in terms of improvisational comedy, but play it like a center fielder in baseball. Before the ball's hit, you can't be charging forward or backward or right or left, but be in a position that's sort of neutral where you can react. And you're driving to the crime scene. You're not doing your job if you're already sort of thinking, I bet the husband did this, because of how egos work and the psyche works, you're going to try to make yourself right, mm-hmm. and you might ignore things. You should show up like a center fielder before the ball is hit, completely neutral.
And that's what I used
to
do, and I used to drive my people crazy. I would stand in a crime scene and not say anything and just look around. And everybody would look at me and start talking, yapping. You know, I said, well, you shut up, just shut up. And somebody would say, what's he doing? I don't know. He does this weird thing all the time. What I'm doing is I'm trying to think about the perpetrator. What'd you do in here? Why did you do this way? Did you bring a weapon with you for the purpose of using it? Or did you obtain a weapon here? Did something go wrong and you grabbed the knife out of the block in the kitchen? What happened? What did you do? Why did you do that? Why did you do this? I even speak to the victim. They never answer me, but I speak to them. I'd look at them. Who did this to you? You need to help me find out who did this to you. Let me look at you.
So what?
I was considered to be weird.
Okay. Yeah, I get it, but I like the super pragmatic approach to all this. Because, again, the TV shows are like, I got a gut feeling on this one, Johnny.
No, that's not nonsense. I had a detective who used to tell me that all the time. Well, my gut says this. I don't care what your gut says. I'm not a gastroenterologist. I don't care about your gut.
And by the way, if that guy had any kind of batting average with his gut, I'd go to the track with him every Sunday.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, I think he'd have been on the bench if we worked just with his average. It's just, tell me the facts. I don't care about anything else.
One last question with Gina Grad.
Yeah, there's so many of us love shows like this, and yours is great. The shows like The First 48, I think the theory is if you don't really get a good, strong, solid lead within the first 48 hours, you're a little bit screwed. Have you found that to be the case, or is that not really how it works?
That is not the case at all. Those are the people that fill the ranks of some agencies that want to do this, do it quickly, and move on to the next softball game that they're supposed to play in. 48 hours is meaningless. It's absolutely meaningless. You're either a detective or you're not. And the clock doesn't mean anything.
Right, take your time.
I tried to tell her it was a dumb question, but she said she needed an answer now.
They think a lot of things about homicide investigation that it's driven into their heads by the movies, by television. And 99% of it is nonsense, unfortunately.
So Joe always had time for backup.
Right.
Does it, do you have to run into this, and this must have come up a time or two. Lieutenant Joe Kenda is on the line. Homicide Hunters, name of the show, Wednesdays, 9 p.m. on Discovery. Very fascinating show. You must have had to run into this, where you find out the woman is dead. And now, through the investigation of figuring out who her associates were and who she knew, you find out she's having an affair, and you must go report that to the grieving husband and family. That's got to be a horrible part of the job.
Reporting things that are the facts of the case are horrible, be they an affair or be they something they just didn't know about this person. That they were using drugs and they didn't know it, those kinds of things. It is always horrible to be the bearer of bad news. I used to be the person who would give death notifications.
Oh, boy.
You begin to feel you're the angel of death. You ring a doorbell. What's interesting is you're standing on the porch of a house at 1 o'clock in the morning wearing a suit, not a uniform, and you're holding up a badge, and somebody's not home who's supposed to be. When that person answers the door, they already know. You can see it in their face. And I learned through bitter experience that a sharp knife cuts clean. So I would say your son, your wife, your daughter, your whatever, I'm afraid they are no longer alive. I'd stay away from bullet wounds. I wouldn't say murdered or killed them. It's not much, but it's something. And then I would wait for the grief reaction. Sometimes they put your arms around you. Sometimes they would stand there in stunned silence. Sometimes they would collapse. It just depends on what's going to happen next as to how you react to that. The same thing is true, to answer your question, when you tell them, well, why would anybody do this? Well, were you aware that your son had a narcotics habit? What? So you reveal sometimes things about loved ones that nobody really wants to know.
See what happens when you ask a good question, Gina?
Oh, you get a great answer.
He waxes on poetically.
That's BS.
So that
they can tell you what they might know about that or what might jog their memory.
One last one for you, Lieutenant Joe Kenda. Have you ever delivered that on somebody's porch and saw in their face that they knew?
Sweet relief.
Well, sweet relief, yeah.
Thank God my spouse worked.
But you must have. Their spouses all the time, right?
The absolute worst example. The father, whose son was murdered, I'm at the house, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. Who's got my son at the coroner's office? Well, what happens about burying them? Well, if you have a funeral home of your choice, you can contact them, and they will recover your son's remains from the coroner's office, and you may have a funeral. Do I have to pay for that?
Wow. What'd you do,
well,
go by my dad's house?
Sure you would.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you just keep him then?
Oh, God.
Wow. So, you know right there, there's a dad who's had it up to here with his son.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
We don't know that he did it.
Complicated relationship.
But
yes, as they say. Yeah.
Probably had a few.
Not all
few
families run-ins. Are close, as they say.
No, very interesting stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Pops Carolla, everybody. Homicide Hunter, name of the show, Wednesday, 9 p.m. on Discovery. We'll call in and check in again, Lieutenant Joe. This was enlightening.
I'm glad you thought so.
Thank you.
Have a pleasant afternoon. Goodbye.
You too. I like that. That's a little Chris Hansen in him.
Yeah, a little Dan Rather.
It's right. You should approach that crime scene with no preconceived notions. No matter what the person, you know, she was a stripper, she was a prostitute. You can't go in going killed by her pimp. You just have to walk in and read it.
Right.
Because otherwise, your ego and your preconceived notions will always compete with what's going on.
Reality.
God, there's nothing worse than one of those DAs gets hold of a case, decides. I mean, Mark Garagos would blow a gasket when you start talking to him about this stuff. These DAs that just sort of decided this what's happened, and then everything's just about making everything fit their narrative, even if they don't have anything. I mean, it borders on illegal and right. criminal and all that at a certain point. But even if it's not even a moral issue, just the idea that you'd make things work in your head because this is what you conceived in advance. It's like the opposite of what your job is. All right. It's very interesting that you look into the deceased. And I'm sure pretty quickly you find out that they're murdered. I don't want to say for a reason, but
there's a story.
There's
there.
A story, and there's a reason why it's 95% people they knew right. and 5% random.
Right. And he even said one case took 9 years, but that's cool. I got time.
I like it. All what? Right. Let's see.
What?
What? So many.
Let me tell you about Geico, man. You don't have to be a lieutenant to suss this one out. Save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance. You don't have to go anywhere. Just go to geico.com. You don't have to leave the house. 15 what? Minutes. You could be saving 15% or more on your car insurance. What? Why wouldn't you? Of course you would, Lieutenant.
All right, that was Joe Kenda on The Adam Carolla Show back in 2017. Now, before we get to this next clip, I remind everybody that this Friday we'll be in Kentucky at Comedy Off Broadway, Lexington, Kentucky. So make sure to get your tickets. They are going fast. And also Napa next Friday, the 27th, for Adam Carolla is Unprepared. Got some live shows. Adam's all over the place. Come by. Say hi. Press the flesh. Take a picture. Enjoy yourself. This next clip is from 2015. Michael Jai White, or Jai White, J-A-I, White, comes in.
Michael Jai White.
That's right. You know him from Spawn, Black Dynamite.
Yeah, this is his second appearance on Adam Carolla Show 1568. Michael's an incredible martial artist and actor. You've seen him in a million different things. This episode also had Joe Coy. This is just the portion with Michael Jai White, Gina Grad, and Brian Bishop from May of 2015. The interview, the news, and a sweet drop courtesy of Michael. Check it out.
Michael Jai White is here. Skin Trade, name of the movie, in theaters May 8th and available now on video on demand. Good to see you again, Michael.
Good to see you, man. Good to be back.
You look good. You look like you've been hitting it good. You've been working out.
Yeah, getting ready for some stuff. Yeah.
What do you got coming out?
Yeah, I'm about to direct a movie in Thailand.
Well, you got to have big biceps if you're going to Thailand to direct. When you go behind the camera, you need those guns, man.
Yeah, well, I'm in front of the camera, too.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So I'm doing both.
Now, what's that one going to be about?
That's going to be like about a whole bunch of ass kicking.
Clearly.
You know, it's a whole bunch of ass kicking. Myself, Tony Jaa, he's going to be in that as well.
It's a hit!
You and Thailand kicking ass.
Yeah, and Josh Barnett.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and Isai Morales.
Cool.
Yeah.
Tony Jaa's pretty badass.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We just hooked up. We did an interview for KTLA this morning.
Barnett is a MMA guy?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. Probably the most decorated heavyweight MMA guy.
Yeah, yeah.
He does a lot of, he'll beat you through submission, or he'll beat you through punching you in the head.
He's been UFC heavyweight champion, Strikeforce, and Matamoros.
Yeah, he's the guy who, I think he's the guy who had the two with Brock Lesnar. He got Brock to tap out.
No, someone else. That was
different guy.
Yeah, but you know this cat. He was the babyface assassin. Now he's the war master. He had two different.
He graduated.
Thomas was the Motor City Cobra, Thomas Hearns,
right.
And then he became the Hitman.
Yeah. Right, right.
The greats have two nicknames.
When you punch so hard that one nickname, not enough. Motor City Cobra doesn't instill enough fear.
Yeah.
We need Hitman. You physically think you're going to be killed.
Yeah, you know, the nickname that I always tripped out on was the Huntington Beach Bad Boy.
Yeah, Tito Ortiz.
I did not think that was serious. I thought it was a joke at first. I'm like, Huntington Beach Bad Boy? When I first heard that, I was like, no, they can't be serious. They cannot be serious.
And bad. I was talking to someone today about this, about nicknames in general. Uh-huh. And the one that drives Pepino Cuevas. You're going to pull up the guy's record here. Yeah, you pull up his record. Pepino Cuevas had like 50 fights. He had a couple. He had the belt in like two or three weight divisions. Pepino Cuevas. He's going to he started professionally when he was like 14. He had the strap at 18. He's going to the Boxing Hall of Fame. He's probably in the Boxing Hall of Fame. Pepino Cuevas. And I only knew the guy's name. And one day it was driving me nuts. So I said to my Latin nanny, who speaks Spanish very nicely, I said, "What Pepino? What is that? What does that mean?" She said, "Cucumber." I said, the guy's fighting name was Cucumber Cuevas.
No, that's a dick reference.
No.
He's hung. Yeah.
The guy has 50 total fights, he has 35 wins, but 31 by KO. And this is a lightweight guy who has 35 wins and 31 by KO. Yeah. That's a hard punching 140-pound dude.
I'll say.
That's a tough cucumber.
Fucking lays the Pepino.
Why don't we just name him Ambrosia Salad? Like, is there anything less frightening than a cucumber?
Right.
There's a worse.
Even cucumber. A squash is scarier.
Summer it's
curved,
squash.
Yeah, curved, yeah. Thicker.
It's got breadsticks. Anything. I got to find out why he's named Pepino Cuevas. Now you got to work on that. All right. So
let me make a case for the best nickname in sports. My favorite. Andre Kirilenko was a basketball player for the Jazz. His nickname was AK-47. His initials are AK. He wore number 47, and he was Russian.
That's the greatest nickname
in sports.
That's beautiful.
That's good.
AK-47.
Conjures up just...
It's also solid. Yeah.
That is goddamn solid. All right, so Skin Trade is... That's the one we're talking about now. Then it's off to fight in Thailand, right?
Oh, yeah. Skin Trade, it's coming out. It's got myself, Dolph Lundgren, Tony Jaa, Ron Perlman and Peter Weller. So it's Spawn,
RoboCop.
It's Spawn, RoboCop, and Hellboy.
Right.
Yeah.
And that'll be out again on May 8th, but you can get on video on demand now. Where'd you shoot that?
Shot in Thailand and Vancouver.
Is Thailand just a place to go now to shoot stuff?
Yeah, and to get a sex change if you're there. But yeah.
So it's a win-win.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what do you do? Why? What's going on in Thailand?
Well, I mean, it's a hotbed. It's really a hotbed. It's hot as hell.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's really a great place to be, a overcrowded place.
Mm-hmm.
In Bangkok, I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's really serene, man. Like, the people are just, like, chill. It's got that crazy. If you've ever been to China or any of those type of places where there's, like, forget it, like, the traffic, you want to hang yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, like, I'd flip out and I'd just go to sleep.
Right.
When I'd be in the traffic. But it's, like, to be so congested, like, people are just mellow as hell.
Hmm.
You know, you see, you know, about a family of eight on a moped,
right?
You know, mm-hmm. And they've got their chicken.
You got to make that diamond lane, man.
Yeah, but you know, it's really mellow.
How are they with giant black people?
Well, I mean, they're cooler than, like, I'm in China and people are dragging other folks out of their house to get a look at me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I didn't feel so weird.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I couldn't find anything to fit me, I'm not that damn big.
No, I know.
You know,
but they're,
you can get a Thai suit made for 40 baht.
You have
over
to
there.
Get it made.
Yeah.
Do you know I couldn't get sneakers there? I'm like, come on. Seriously? I couldn't get sneakers. I couldn't get clothes, man. It's like, it's weird. I'm not that damn big.
Might I suggest a suitcase?
Right.
The next time you leave the country and go to Thailand, you pack some sneakers.
I'm sending a box of stuff first, you know?
That's how you know you've arrived. You send that steamer trunk ahead.
Has the box arrived?
That's right.
Yeah, man.
No, if you go do Celebrity Apprentice or something and you're going to be at the Trump Tower for potentially a month and a half, you got to send
it ahead of time.
Send the box, man. So how long will you spend in Thailand?
I'll be there a couple of months. Since I'm directing, I gotta scout things and
it's gonna be in the summer.
Yeah.
Oh, humid.
Do you have to time it? Well, I don't know when there's summer. I think every day summer.
Oh yeah, it's hot.
But
not like their winter or anything.
Do you have to time it for like, I don't know, monsoon season or something like that? I mean, is it gonna rain every day and all that stuff?
You know,
Michael's like, oh shit, I should have thought about that.
thankfully we got a lot of interiors, you know. Uh-huh. It's like, yeah, you know, it's cool. It's gonna be. It's gonna work out.
And who wrote the script?
Well, there's a guy named Chris Hottie.
Mm.
He did the first draft, but he did it by my notes. So in a way, I kind of wrote it, and then I rewrote what he wrote that I told him to write.
Mm-hmm.
so it's kind of like that. Yeah.
Yeah. But he'll get credit for writing.
Oh,
it, even though
you know,
everything.
Well, you know, it's the way the unions go, bro.
Yeah, no, I know.
Uh-huh.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
I've been there.
Yeah.
So a couple months over there, and God, it just sounds like, I don't know, why does everyone else's life sound like an adventure? I was in fucking Azusa today, staring at sofas on lawns and dogs walking in circles looking for a place to die.
That's the plot of Michael's film.
You and Dolph are going over to Vancouver and kicking ass.
Yep.
Yeah, well, you know, it's going to be hot, but I'm not going to complain about it.
Mm-hmm.
It could be worse.
Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. All right. And what do you do, like, what do you eat over there in Thailand?
Oh, everything. I mean, it's not crazy. It's not one of those, like, you know.
Thai food is good.
I love Thai food, but
it's not like
you
eating critters or anything. Like, you know, in China, that's like, you know, that's like fear factor.
Right.
You could get a deep fried bag of crickets if you wanted one.
Well, you can get that here.
Yeah,
you know.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I mean,
Staples Center.
But, I mean, they got good.
Ice cream truck.
Their
mayonnaise.
Street meat in Thailand is good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's clean, too.
Uh-huh. You
know? Okay. So, I mean.
Good name for a UFC fighter, by the way.
Street meat. That would be a good one.
That'd be badass.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, Thailand, I mean, you know. You know, everybody's going crazy over coconut water and all that type of stuff. And it costs about $6 at Whole Foods. Well, you can get like drinks right out of the coconut, fresh coconut. It's about like 30 cents.
Sure.
Yeah.
They're allowed to all over the place.
Yeah. It's like great. It's great food.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. I'm looking for something to make me happy.
Yes. And me too. I'm looking for things to make me happy.
No, but you got to be a little.
That heat.
I need, okay, the heat. Okay.
Yeah.
Now I'm happy.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Michael Jai White, by the way. It's J-A-I.
Mm-hmm.
You taught, I'm reading here, that you taught like emotionally disturbed kids for a while.
Oh, yeah. I was an EMD teacher.
What's that?
Emotionally disturbed. Yeah. So it's like special ed.
How was that?
Mainly it's like, you know, a lot of the kids, like inner city kids that were, you know, delinquent. You know, a few of mine had parole officers, basically.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I was able to reach them because I was one of them. At one time.
You were a delinquent kid.
Yeah, well, I was a rough kid. You know, I mean, that's why I got into martial arts. That kind of saved me. But I've been on my own since I was 14.
Now, how'd that work?
Yeah, well, it worked out really good.
I know it worked out. You're going to Thailand with Dolph Lundgren and drinking out of coconuts while I'm going to Azusa and staring at Mexicans. But what I'm saying is how did it work that you were abandoned at 14?
Well, I mean, you know, by my own volition, to be honest with you, I had my mom was not some... You know, mommy dearest. She was a sweet country woman that had, you know, she was like, basically, she's the black Edith Bunker, was what she was.
Mm-hmm.
But she was raising, a monster. You know, I was very developed early. I mean, I haven't grown in since I was 13 or 14.
So you're like in a man's body.
Yes,
early.
Absolutely. I was into everything. I mean, I was fighting grown men at, you know, when I was in, I was 15 years old fighting in karate tournaments.
Your mom was Edith. Was anybody sitting in Archie's chair?
Nobody was sitting in Archie's chair.
So you needed, you needed some, a presence.
Yeah.
There.
Well, you know, I was wild. I mean,
did you know your dad? Did you have a relationship with him?
I knew the cat, but he was one of these guys that, like, you know, he's like a car dealer. Like, yeah, you get two kids and you get a kid over here. You want one? Okay, you got a kid over there. It's like that kind of thing.
Do you have kids now?
Yes, I do.
Isn't it weird when you have kids that people can be that way? Like, when you talk to people, and especially mama, but when you talk to people and they're like, well, when I was three, my mom went to, well, first she went to Indiana and then she went to Florida and she remarried. But then I saw her again when I was seven. Mm. And you're like, there's no way. I couldn't imagine.
Well, yeah, but
especially my mom. But even I'm an emotional piece of shit. I couldn't imagine not seeing my kids like a week.
It was a different time. Especially, well, me, you know, I got to, you know, I'll just be real. I mean, it's an urban thing. It's a black thing as well. I mean, come on. Like,
I know. But how do we unring that bell, I guess is what I'm asking.
You got to realize where it came from. I mean, just three generations ago, I mean, you know, you could, the family could be split up very easily.
Right.
And so it gets better each generation. And, you know, you guys, you come around my father's time, he thinks that he's a good cat just because he has his kids' addresses in a phone book. I mean, he used to brag about this. Yeah, like we should erect a statue in his honor because he knows
he knew where to send a letter.
Yeah, he knows where the kids live. Not that he even does anything. But he's a damn sight better than his dad, who was like a damn near this close to an axe murderer.
Right.
You know, and so it's like he thinks that he's doing really well. Who knows? I'm sitting here and, you know, maybe my son will be like, well, you know, like I've got my kids' college fund all situated by the time that they're 16. Who knows? I mean, maybe he'll do a damn sight better than me. But there's a lot of stuff. It's just like, when you grow up in an inner city and, you know, a single mom, it's kind of like your dad, like when you were a kid, he put you in the middle of the freeway and said, good luck.
And
you
I
just
know.
Start dodging.
Well, he named you Sue.
Yeah. And so you got to figure it out on the way.
Right. Yeah. I'm just saying it's sad because it's just an accepted norm.
Yeah.
And that. It's sad that everyone just goes, well, yeah, of course you didn't have a relationship with your dad. Grew up in the inner city. And I just feel like I don't know why we're spending so much time sort of diminishing the roles of each, you know. What my mom, or I should say my wife, does for my kids is really important. Mm-hmm. And then what I do is really important, too, but it's totally different. Mm-hmm. We're trying to do this thing where it's like everyone can do everything or one person can do everything. It's not the key to success. The key to success is dad, hang around, mama, raise the kids, and it's going to be better.
Yeah, the kids got to be priority. I mean, that's just, but if you don't grow up with that, sometimes it's
well, how did you get it? Your kids?
Well, for me, I knew, I mean, I say this to a lot of cats in my situation. I go, like, you know, when you were a kid, you wanted your father there. Okay.
Right.
And you probably made a pact with yourself that you were going to do different once it became your turn.
Right.
But yeah, it gets your turn, but you don't learn the techniques that it takes, you know, and then society is going to, you know, be the lowest common denominator. And there's not a whole lot of imagery that you got to choose from. And
right.
So a lot of times, you know, I mean, there's a lot of people when they really get, when they're really honest about it, some don't know how to really achieve that. You know,
well, I can say that there's a lot of like, you know, well, your dad was an alcoholic and now the daughter married an alcoholic because daddy was an alcoholic and she was trying to save daddy and she never could and he died of cirrhosis. Now she magically was attracted to. But what I would like society to work in all colors, all cultures is to go, remember how bad it was to have daddy as an alcoholic?
Right.
Let's not marry an alcoholic and then raise a kid who has a dad who's an alcoholic. Let's remember that pain and let's figure out a way to figure it out.
Yeah.
Every success I've had in my life has been doing the exact opposite of what my parents would do. Like, I literally went, what would my dad do? Mm-hmm. And then I just do the opposite. But it's the key to success.
You have to have a clear and strong vision of who you are. Success. And if there was... There's a lot that go on in the culture that I can say. A lot of things, contribute to you seeing yourself as less than. And therefore, you don't feel like you deserve it. There's a lot of things working on a black male psyche and a black psyche that, okay, it's okay for things to be less. I mean, you can call each other like bitches and hoes. Nigga, all that type of stuff, and that's supposed to be accepted? Come on. There's a part of your brain that knows where that came from. You know, but for you to accept it means that you deserve that to some degree.
Yeah.
And it's a deep psychological thing. And when you have that, you have people who, do a self-sabotaging type of thing. I mean,
I'm sorry to cut you off, but it's not just a black thing. It's a poor mentality thing, mostly black thing. But what I'm saying is when you come from a place where there's just no examples of success and everybody's downtrodden and nothing ever works out, you don't even know that there is a thing as succeeding or working out. You don't even know that exists in life.
Definitely. If you're poor, poor blacks and poor whites are so similar. It's crazy. They should actually unite because there's just so much similarity. But of course, there's other there's certain things that make people really believe. And there's a whole culture of people, black people, that call themselves niggas, and they're proud of it, which is insane to me.
So don't abide by that?
No, not even a little bit. To me, that's ridiculous. That's like the height of being ridiculous.
I don't know how old your son is, but does he ever say stuff like that? And you're like, wait, what?
No, my son does not.
How old is he?
Well, my oldest is 24.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you have like
grown up. But nobody in my family uses that word.
Right.
No.
And do you have any relationship with your father now?
Oh, he passed on. But, we got to know each other. And I got to realize how... This is going to sound strange, how much I benefited not growing up with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's certain things, since I didn't see him all that often, he was bigger than life. He was like this real gregarious character. But like some of the messages he gave me was stuff that one time I visited him and he used to always dress up in these slick suits. And he says, you never really completely dress until you have your matching pistol.
Right.
He had a matching pistol for whatever. imagine me growing up with that dude. What I mean?
What drives me insane? Once in a while, I'll hear the dad tell his son or daughter, but it's mostly a son thing, where they go, listen, you got to screw that guy before he screws you, because he's looking to screw you. Everyone is looking to screw you, and you screw them first.
Like, I hope he said to his son and his daughter.
Stop fucking poisoning everybody with your crazy fucking violent thoughts about how shitty the world is and about everyone is gunning for you.
Every time I see somebody like that, I think about there's a history that guy came from to think that like that.
Right.
I'm not giving him an excuse, but I want to understand where you're coming from. What I mean?
I completely agree. But I swear to you, it's like I say to the, I'll tell Dr. Drew this, he'll go, his dad was a product of the Depression, and that's why. But at a certain point, when you've been a successful physician for 31 years, stop being such a fucking penny pincher and get your shit together. People go like, hey, I come from a place. Okay, good. That's where you come from.
Right.
Now you're rich, or now you're smart, or now you're educated. Knock it off.
Right.
You're a man. Now you're a man. Yeah. Knock it off.
It's all points to a balance, man. It's like, I don't know. It's like, change is difficult. People are going to resist change no matter what. And so to really have real change, you got to go through something.
Yep.
And how many people willingly want to go through something? They'll be satisfied with being 80% cool and 20% bullshit.
Well, and the pain that they're already dealing with is familiar, and at least that's something.
Yeah.
It's not unfamiliar and scary and painful.
Yeah, if you using the comparative method, if you're a little, if you're not as bullshit as most of the other people, you're pretty good.
Well,
you know, that's what people do, but nobody wants to go 100%
people,
most of the time.
People cling to things that aren't effective because they're theirs.
Yeah.
And they're comfortable.
And they just are comfortable. They're familiar, mm-hmm. even if it's not working for them.
Yeah.
It's not working at all.
The devil you know.
But they defend it. Yeah. And I like have these conversations. It's just, it's by the way, it's reflexive for people.
Of course.
Like they just have a sort of reflex where I have these discussions where I go, hey, this is what's happening. And I go, yeah, well, that's because of this. And I go, okay, but we need to fix this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that's because of this. Okay, I understand. We need to fix this. Yeah, but that's because of, let's stop defending.
Right.
Stop. Do you want to fix this or don't you want to fix this? And I don't tell me why it keeps happening.
Right.
Let's figure out a way to fix it and then we'll move forward.
Yeah.
But, and this is a problem. Even in a problem, people get super defensive about whatever it is. I have people who will show up late and go, I'm never late. I am never late. And I'll go, well, now, no, not never. Because you're late today. Yeah, well, today, but never.
Right.
It's like, well, let's go ahead and take that zero off the loss department in the late fight because you are late.
There's like a concept I just wish people could like just grasp. Look forward to being wrong. I love being wrong because then I learn something. You know, and I progress. Okay, when you're always trying to prove that you're right. I mean, come on. If I've been proven wrong, I learned something, right?
I totally
Isn't that
agree.
A good thing?
I would love to know what it's like to be wrong sometimes.
Wow.
I'd love that.
Well, and I have a teacher
who used to say
you win some, you learn some. So I think that a lot of people subscribe to that.
Right,
I hope they do.
It's so like it makes you better.
Yes.
Like why not? Why are people protecting their egos and all that? It's like, come on.
I have no idea, and you treat it like, meaning when there's some sort of catastrophic failure of an aircraft, the FAA gets together and puts the thing back together in an empty hangar. Mm-hmm. And then they find out there was a problem with the stress joint that literally there's an old jet where the windows were square instead of round.
Mm-hmm.
And if you picture a square window and now picture a corner, that's a stress point.
Yeah.
A crack. Will go and the thing will decompress or whatever it is. If it's a round window, there's no weak spot.
Uh-huh.
There's no corner to it. And they will get a metallurgist and they'll get together and they'll get the guy to design. But they don't sit around and go, oh, the plane's fine. No. Hey, that last week that plane flew just fine.
We never crashed planes.
But anyway, last week, or this one, you had a plane crash once.
Yeah.
What about your plane? Like, okay, all right, we're talking about this plane.
Yeah.
And we'd like to know why it crashed. And by the way, we'd like to know so it doesn't crash again. Let's all get together and try to figure out what's wrong with
us. That's the thing that drives me craziest. There's, there will be opposing sides arguing and never getting any damn where. And just figuring out new ways to say one and one is two so they're right. Can we say, yes, you're right. Okay, I get your point. Now can you get mine? And tell me if you heard me, let's arrive at something. And what is the goal? And we're going to try to really get some answers. Let's like really focus on getting the answer.
I know.
Yeah.
And the answer is always, you had a plane that crashed. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with what the fuck we're trying to get to here, but I appreciate the insult. Yes, agreed. Drop stop. You don't want to crash your car?
Yeah.
Forget about your plane. Drop stop, man. These guys, look, last week, McDreamy, man, died because he was looking for a cell phone.
Too soon, boy.
But it slipped in between the seat and the transmission hump there, and he was feeling around for it. Next thing you know, 18-wheeler. Here comes Debbie Dootson down the road in an 18-wheeler. Took him out. Even his own surgical prowess could not save him.
The team had to put him back together to figure out what was wrong.
Couldn't do it. All right, Michael, hang out. We'll do some news, and you jump in. Give us your opinion.
Cool.
Let's do it.
News with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Showbiz, Congress, tech news, sports news, world news. Give me news with Gina Grad. Weird shit out of Florida. Sex surveys, Obama. Need news. News with Gina, Gina.
The News with Gina Grad.
Well, Prince has recorded a new song in response to the current events in Baltimore in reaction to the death of Freddie Gray while in police custody. And an official statement from spokesperson Yvette Noel Scher said the song has, quote, addresses the unrest in Baltimore and the socio-political issues around the country in the wake of the slew of killing of young black men. Now, the release plans for the song have not been announced, but he is really, really wanting to make sure that we know that this song is in process.
No one's heard it?
No, I looked for it. It's not released anywhere. But Prince is writing a song. Everybody stop what they're doing.
He's not going by the symbol anymore, right?
He's back to Prince.
He's back to Prince.
You're done writing Slave on his face.
I know everyone loves Prince, but I hate that guy.
You weren't an Under the Cherry Moon guy.
I was just listening to one of his 80s songs that drove me fucking nuts. Listen, I understand he's a musical genius, and I understand he's a great guitar player, but I think he's a douchebag. That's what I'm saying. Are we not allowed to do that? Why can't you be both?
He looks like an elegant older lady.
All right.
In his new outfits and jewelry.
What song was I?
Raspberry Beret.
No, I actually kind of like that song.
There's a handful of Prince songs that are
When Doves Cry. I hate that song. Just play a little Doves Cry. It's really bad. Should have just ended right there.
That would have been the best. Maybe an extended version. Sorry about that. I don't want to annoy you more than necessary.
No. Sorry.
This is worse.
Yeah, this is worse. Sorry. I just played the first thing that came up.
He's always fucking somebody in his songs, right?
That's the idea.
Darling Nick is a great song.
Adam, you look like you are physically in pain.
It's just
while
a
you're
bad
listening
song.
To this.
It's really? So bad. I really hate this song. I'll listen to Raspberry Beret all day over this.
Me too.
All right, I'm done.
Yeah, sorry. I can't agree with you on that one.
Everyone loves Prince.
Yeah,
everyone loves Prince.
Yeah, well, I mean. As a musician, come on. He's
I know,
one of
but he makes bad.
Ever.
He has some shitty songs that get played a lot that annoy me.
Well, anything could annoy you. You hear it a whole bunch and you really dissect it. I understand, the whole personality thing. I mean, I probably wouldn't want to sit down with the cat. But, I mean, his music, man, the early stuff.
You got to go. That was early.
He kind of really created that.
You know what?
Like when somebody's an original.
He's your Hall & Oates.
No.
Which is, I'm the only white guy who hates Hall & Oates.
Right.
Brother, I probably know more rock than you do.
Hmm?
I would challenge you right here. I'm serious.
Well,
I may have grew up in the hood, but I was into every kind of music whatsoever.
Maybe a little and Finish the Phrase.
Not so much the country western thing, because in the back of my mind, I always hear string them up.
Yeah.
Well,
that's the background singers, but that's not the lead.
Yeah.
The lead is yelling, boil the tar. Background yelling string them up. That's not the lead.
String them up.
String them up. Well, let's see. What bands? Like, name a rock band from back in the day.
My goodness. Like, I knew.
Who are your favorites?
Eagles.
Oh.
Lots of common ground here.
I mean, right. Come on. Eagles.
Brian will play an Eagle. Let's see. What other? Anybody else?
I'd be naming everybody damn near.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we're around the same age, I think.
Witchy Woman. Ugh. You can't like this song, Michael. You'll be the only, if you do, you'll be the only black man on the planet who likes Witchy Woman.
Well, I don't like it. I mean, I like the hits, of course.
This was a hit.
Was it?
Yeah. She's got cat's eyes and nine lives, and she's a devil gypsy New Orleans Cajun queen.
Raven hair. It starts out with promise, too, but it gets bad.
To be,
like, this is a decent groove.
To be fair to the Eagles, if you were writing a song between 1973 and 1976, you had to write one devil, witchy
black
woman.
Black magic.
Black magic. You had to write one of those.
Cat magic woman black.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can see these guys sitting down in front of the record label guy going, look, it's either that or a song about rambling. Now, which is it going to be? And it's like...
This sounds like Victim of Love.
Actually, I don't want to write a song about that. My hands are tied, guys. Glenn, my hands are tied. It's got to be about rambling, or it's got to be about a woman, a witchy, catty... All right.
Those cats.
You got to find that man show bit. You got that man show bit? Retro rock and rock?
It was the CD you were selling, you were promoting?
Yeah. It was all about witchies and rambling and gambling. Yeah. All right, give us another one.
Well, I can't think of a group that would care less about this, but it's what everyone's talking about, so we got to do it. The newest British royal, little girl, born on Saturday. Her name is Charlotte Elizabeth Diana. Charlotte, feminine for Charles.
Whoa.
Yeah. Mm. Likely for her grandfather, Prince Charles, and the middle name, great-grandmother, the current queen, and Princess Diana, of course, who passed away in 1997. Charlotte Elizabeth Diana is fourth in line to the throne after Prince Charles, her father, Prince William, and her brother, Prince George. Little Charlotte.
Mm-hmm. Do they give chicks the throne these days? I mean, she'll be the queen,
Elizabeth.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But a lot of people got to go wrong first.
They always go, we want a boy. We need a boy. But if you're going to be the queen, why not?
Yeah. And she was only in the hospital from the very beginning to the end for 14 hours, which apparently is very short.
Somebody in the future is going to, and it could be young Charlotte, be the queen and then undergo gender reassignment surgery and become the king and the queen of the same nation.
Wow.
That'd be awesome, wouldn't it?
It's on you. World's royals.
Yeah.
Young royals of
I'm out of the game.
Yeah,
I'm out of this poker tournament a million years ago.
Yeah.
But it would be nice if somebody did that just once.
I feel like people who aren't in the UK care about this more than the people in the UK. I mean, don't they really just look at this as one big tax burden when you think of the royal family?
Yeah, I don't know. Every once in a while, I know you have to, you got to fly a helicopter and sniff out a landmine or something every once in a while to basically justify the amount of money it costs to keep Buckingham Palace up and running. And I guess they probably would argue that as an institution, with all the tourism and all the whatever, it's actually maybe a moneymaker. I mean, I don't know.
But who gets it? And that's why I'm saying it seems like a bigger deal for everyone outside of the UK.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because do they really give a shit?
No.
I didn't think so.
I don't think so. But I bet it's like, it's probably like this with the English and the royal family, which is, I can call my sister a whore, but you can't call Michael can't call. I sure as hell can't call Michael's sister a whore.
No.
That'd be the biggest mistake of my ever made. But see, what I mean is, they can probably talk shit about their royal family.
Right.
But if you went over there and start talking shit about them, they'd probably get all protective.
Got it.
That's what I think.
Agreed.
So, call the queen a whore and see what happens.
Well, a mother from Columbus, Georgia, who was worried about her misbehaving 10-year-old son, had the police, quote-unquote, arrest him over the weekend. Her name is Chiquita Hill. She is the mother of three. And she said she tried to talk to her son several times about acting up in school, being disrespectful, not doing his homework, but he just wasn't getting it.
That's like a little kid.
They say he was 10. That's when Hill called the cops, asked them to simulate an arrest. They came in, they talked to the boy, they handcuffed him, they sat him in the back
twice.
Of the squad, and he was a mess. The kid cried, begged to get out of the car. Now, Chiquita posted this experience on her Facebook page. Many people supported it, liked it, shared it. There were a few dissenters, but so far people are fans of this. But Chiquita does not regret what she did. She wanted to make a point that in the future, quote, being disrespectful at any age to anyone could get you killed.
Mm. All right.
Pretty smart woman.
You know what drives it home? How small and little he is? The Avenger shirt. He's like a little Avenger shirt. It's like, oh, it's like a little kid.
Well, there's a reason that Scared Straight is my favorite TV show.
Yeah, it's obviously working. He's terrified.
By the way, as far as the cops go, like, hey, super white, middle-aged cop, could you come over here and simulate arresting this little brown baby while he cries and we'll take pictures of it? Like, doesn't that cop have to go, like, you know what? I'd love to.
I'm going to recuse myself.
Given the current climate.
Believe me, I'd love nothing
and,
more.
There's lots of social media and things can be taken out of context. I'm just going to go ahead and give out a couple jaywalking tickets and pretend we didn't have this conversation.
I got a quota to hit.
We got something called the policeman's ball. Yeah, you thought it went away. Oh, no. Somebody's got to make the punch. I do a whole thing where I freeze part of the punch and I make it like an iceberg, and it melts and makes more punch. I've probably gotten into too much detail already. Anyway, have fun with little
Chiquita Jr.
Chiquita Jr. over there. I'll tell you what.
Chiquita.
I got some zip ties. I'll put one in your mailbox. But if
that's
I see you standing out in the front lawn, I'm going to keep driving.
I bet that's the suburbs.
That's somewhere.
I bet there's a bored cop in the suburbs that doesn't get any action.
It's Columbus, yeah, Georgia.
But if you want action, let's go round up some streetwalkers or something. Like anything. But hey, white partner, second whitest guy on the planet, let's go over there and be videotaped arresting a black kid's crying. Crying his brains out.
Throwing fucking handcuffs on a crying kid.
It'll be a simulation.
Now, yeah. Would either of you do this with your kids if they just were not listening?
I would definitely tell my nanny to simulate some sort of discipline on these kids. Yeah, no.
She wanted to make it very clear she didn't want him actually arrested.
I'm just saying, given the current climate, when the cop was asked to do this...
yeah.
I just feel like,
who
first off, we're not in the business of simulating arrests. Like, number one, we don't do fake arrests. Why don't you get the guy from the Village People?
The Indian?
The black guy. Yeah. Oh, shit. He's a cop.
Construction?
He's a cop.
The Indian.
Oh, wait. Was he the cop or the construction worker?
The cop. The black guy, ironically, was the cop.
He was a motorcycle cop.
He was the only black motorcycle cop in America.
Band. And he's the only straight guy, too.
He's the only straight guy.
Yeah.
He's the only straight guy, and he's the only black guy to ever be a motorcycle cop. Yeah. But yet, all right.
He was all out of place.
Go get him. You can probably get that guy.
Oh, sure.
There he is.
Uh-huh.
Is he?
I like the one that looks like Janet Jackson.
I have to ask, is he a cop or is he some sort of military?
He's a cop.
Look
because
at his hat.
No.
Look at the decorations.
No. He's cop. He wears.
Oh, look at the guy on the right. Oh, I'm sorry. I missed the black guy.
The guy that wears a nation costume.
First off, hold on a second. You got the guy from Designing Women over, Meshack Taylor. That guy.
I missed the black guy in front.
That guy zelliged his way into this picture.
Yeah.
He's not part of the. I know the lineup. There you go.
Oh, wow.
There's the black guy.
There's two of them.
All right. He changed his outfit up.
Point is, black guys could fuck you up legally.
The point is, by the way, he couldn't even afford a real cop helmet. He had to just get a regular like bell helmet, put a visor on it. But either way, get that cop to arrest your son.
He'll start dancing for him.
Not a real. So, all right, I'm all for it. Like, I like where the mom's headspace was. Let's show this kid some discipline. But I'm just saying, timing's probably a little off. That's all.
Insensitive.
Just real quick, who's the guy across from the Leather Daddy? What's his employment situation? He
works with a power company.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the bolt of lightning.
Don't you see the lightning bolt on his hard hat?
Well, I thought he might be a neo-Nazi.
He's halfway there?
Yeah.
One lightning bolt?
One straight brother, like, probably thought there was going to be a ton of extra pussy for him, but was sadly disappointed.
You know there's a really funny movie in this. Like,
there
a
is.
Remake of this. Like, yeah.
There is. Like, there had to be that conversation where, like, the hot groupie was like, I'd love to blow you guys. You weren't all gay. We're not all gay. No. See you guys down the road.
No.
Come back.
But as far as the discipline thing, man, I just think they need to just bring back ass whippings.
Bring them back.
Bring back ass whippings.
They're back. I got to tell you, they're here.
That's a good thing.
There's fucking ass whippings.
Yeah, bring back some good old-fashioned ass whippings.
Were you corporal punishment kind of guy? Or a dad?
Well, I didn't have to because all I had to do was just show him a scene of Tyson, you know, in one of the movies I did. Right. But like... Really, I mean, when these kids don't have any kind of like, you know, there's no recourse. I mean, they have no punishment. They find out that, oh, I could just threaten to get you arrested, and now you're just neutered.
They have nothing to fear.
I'm
going to
take these two ideas. Let's have the cops simulate the ass whooping, and we'll film that.
Okay.
And we'll throw that up on the internet.
Okay, two birds with one stone.
What could go wrong? We got the man show
social commentary here
clip. By the way, we have if Michael'd like to watch a little retro rock and rock.
This is a fake ad.
Fake commercial from the man show.
Music today. I just don't get it.
Weren't you one of the Village People?
Hey, I'm Adam Carolla. You know, in my day, rock and roll wasn't about boy bands or this robot crap. Our songs were about drinking and brawling and rambling. You're not going to find these lost treasures on the radio, but you will find them here. Pure retro rock and rock. 20 songs that rock so hard, you'll think you've died and went to hell. Songs about whiskey. Whiskey girl, I love my whiskey girl. Going up to Whiskey Mountain, I don't care what my woman thinks. I'm drunk. I'm whiskey. And songs about hard living, hard loving women. Devil lady. To rambling. On a rambling highway, this bird's gotta fly. 18 wheels are rolling. Woman, don't you cry. Cajun whiskey, rambling devil, queen from New Orleans. Pure retro rock and rock. It's a 10. On the Rocker scale.
Pure retro rock and rock can be yours for the low, low price of $19.99 for CD, $12.99 for cassette. Order now.
Pure retro rock and rock, because life's too short not to live in the past.
I pitched that bit for three seasons, and Jimmy was is that bit?
You could have just come up with your own Spinal Tap on that one. That was like dead on.
I think my favorite title was Sour Mash Highway.
It was every song I grew up listening to was about whiskey and
that was a salad of those songs.
Yeah.
A tossed salad of rock.
Thank you. You can toss my salad anytime, Michael Chai. Why?
Okay.
All right. Now, what else we got?
Yeah. Well, a handful of brave men allowed Action 7 News in Albuquerque to swab their beards, and the results showed some beards are as dirty as toilets. Quest Diagnostic microbiologist who tested the swabs, Dawson, said the result blew his mind, finding things like fecal matter in the test swabs. Experts recommend a thorough beard scrubbing and lots of hand washing if you have a
beard.
Can
I say this? Do they impregnate the test swabs with fecal matter before they leave the factory? Mm. Because I feel like there's nothing.
Nothing you get a swab.
That does not come up with some fecal matter on it. I mean,
it does seem like that.
If I bought a brand new case of the test swabs, and
test trace amounts of fecal matter.
And just bought a brand new Rolls Royce and swabbed the headliner. There would be traces of fecal matter on it.
Yep.
Good band name.
Wherever you go, there's traces of fecal matter. Evidently.
It does seem like it's everywhere.
Right?
Yeah.
The one hero.
But if it's everywhere, then it's nowhere.
You know what would be good? You know what would be good? Like to be the guy in the lab coat who just came back to all the guys with the beards and was like, well, most of you had fecal matter, and a lot of you had potato salad, bean salad. Anyway, Jerry over here had nothing but pussy. I mean, it fucking, the chart almost broke the fucking meter. The pussy meter.
Buried
the needle. As much as he just buried his face in pussy all day. By the way, we could not detect anything. A little jiffy, smooth peanut butter. And other than that, was nothing but pussy for Jerry.
The hair itself, not beard hair.
No, it's pubic hair. And not his own.
Not his own.
Whenever we test anything, it's covered in shit, right?
Yep. And they always say, I always love when they go, you know, it's dirtier than a toilet seat. But I don't think toilet seats inherently are dirty. They're porcelain. Things can't really live on it that long.
Well, the toilet's porcelain. The seat's plastic.
Or that squishy grandma foam.
Oh, the squishy toilet seats bother me.
Yeah, my aunt and uncle had that for a long time.
They're always cracked.
Many years ago.
Always somebody's aunt's seat.
Yep. Yeah. With the fuzzy cover.
Yeah, and they don't stay up when you're trying to urinate.
You don't realize that the way the toilet seat is designed is that when you open a regular toilet seat, you get it just past 90 degrees and it stays there. Mm-hmm. When you get the foam one that has 2 inches of nap in it, it goes up. It doesn't go past 90, so it falls down. So what you do is you compress it. You push it down, but now you better hurry up and piss because it's starting to retake its form.
You're on the clock.
It's going to drop like a guillotine.
Yep.
Slice that stream.
Right in half.
That's right.
That's right.
Lop it off.
Lop it off like it's the French Revolution. Let them eat whiz, I say.
Eat.
Let them eat urinal cakes.
All right, let's bring it home.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
String them out. Gina
Grad. That was the news with Gina Grad.
Michael, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me, man.
Always a pleasure. And until next time, Adam Carolla for Joe Coy, Michael Jai White, Gina Grad, and Bald Brian Sand. Mahalo.
You're never really completely dressed until you have your matching pistol.
All right, that was Michael Jai White on the Adam Carolla Show back in 2015. We may even play the early appearance of Time in the Future. So,
oh, definitely will. He was promoting Black Dynamite. He's a great guest. I would love to hear him back on the show again. I'd love to hear him in everything. He's awesome.
Me too. All right, before we get to this last clip, I want to remind everybody that if you haven't rated and reviewed this show, please do so. Just go to Apple Podcasts. Let everybody know you're loving Carolla Classics. It really means the world to us. And if you already have done that, thank you so much. Now, let's get going with the show here. Yesterday and last week, we played some old radio show clips of Norm Macdonald on the Adam Carolla Show Morning Show. And yesterday's infamous tale. I still find it unbelievable, to be honest. but this is another clip from that same day.
Same episode, after that story. Adam and Norm break down some Kenny Rogers songs, three of them, in fact, and it goes a little something like this from March 5th, 2008. Check it out.
And we're back.
Good morning. Who we got in the studio today?
To the Adam Carolla Show.
All right, someone's going to have to stop this juggernaut known as Norm Macdonald. He's 3-0 in the blah, blah, blog. These are actual celebrity blogs. We're gambling on them. T and I, both 1-2, a pathetic 1-2, even with the home field advantage.
Yeah.
1-2.
Norm's an excellent gambler.
He is, and as I've said before, you couldn't tell by looking at him, but he's a very bright man.
I was trying to decide during this game whether I should walk away or run. And Norm told me it was inappropriate to run based on that it's not like the gambler at all.
And right. Also, when you're at the table, you're supposed to count your money.
You're supposed to count your money when you sit at the table?
Right.
Yeah, you got to know how much money you have.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a horrible
message. Every advice
message.
Is bad.
Yeah.
His only good advice is, but you know.
Know when how to fold them?
No, die in your sleep.
Yeah, right. The best that you can hope for. Best Kenny Rogers song for my money ever written.
That is a great song.
All right, so Norm up 3-0, 1-2. What's our next celebrity blog?
Ruby, don't take your love to town.
Oh, wait a second. I swear to you.
My favorite line is, it ain't me who started that old crazy Asian war.
All right, but I went over and did my patriotic chore. Yeah. Somebody, I swear to you, go find the lyrics to Ruby, don't take your love to town. Mike, go find that. And by the way, go find Coward of the County, too, because I think that's a song about, it's really a song about a guy whose wife got raped while he was mowing a lawn. And he never had the guts to confront. No, it's a song where the guy
he was at war with the lawn.
He's a vigilante at the end.
Coward of the County, I swear the guy's like wife was raped or something. Yeah. It's horrible. And Ruby, Don't Take Your Love to Town
is a
song about a guy who goes to Vietnam, gets essentially crippled
his
by stepping.
His legs are bent and paralyzed.
He's mangled. Right. He gets mangled in Vietnam. He comes back to the USA. He marries a beautiful young woman. Painted up your lips and rolled and curled your tinted hair. Oh, sorry. We're going to take a break.
Is this Ruby?
This is Ruby. Now.
Ruby, are you contemplating?
She's got her dress on. She put her hair in curlers. She's going to town. All right, it's the street lights are on. She's heading into town. Now listen to why he can't go with her to town.
Nobody ever accused him of that. I was proud to go into
my patriotic shore. Mm-hmm. Then what happened?
Rhymes with whore.
Yes, it's true that I'm not the man I used to be.
Sure. He used to have legs. So, like, he's in a wheelchair because he got his legs blown off by Bouncing Betty, and she's getting whored up and going into town. Wait a minute. Stop it.
They're not only paralyzed.
It's hard to love a man whose legs are bent and paralyzed.
Yeah. Not only paralyzed, bent.
You figure you could straighten them out, right?
Yeah, if they're paralyzed, it shouldn't
sure,
be bent.
Why not? All right, keep going. So he's got a hot young chick, but he can't satisfy her because his legs are bent and paralyzed. Agent Orange is going to take him down.
No way. Play that last line. Did you hear that last line?
It won't be long until he's not around.
That's what he's heard.
Yeah.
You overheard the doctor.
All right, let's just break it down for a second.
So he's like, you know, I'm not going to be around for a while. I heard the doctor.
Right.
Can you just wait a few months?
Just hang out. Just give it a weekend before you go to town and whore out. My legs are bent and paralyzed. I had to go to NAMM and do my patriotic chore
start that
over
war.
There.
You never started it?
I didn't start it, but I went over there to do what I could. I stepped on a landmine.
Right.
Now I have cancer.
Right.
And you got to go whoring in town?
I believe it was Eisenhower that started, huh?
I know I can't completely satisfy you, but I can still use my mouth.
What about that?
That's not bent and paralyzed.
All right. Can we hear the rest of the song so we can cry?
No, because I just heard the slamming of the door.
I guess she didn't listen to
it. I bet he's heard that before.
Yeah.
Here he comes.
I know I've heard it slam 100 times before.
100?
Yeah, she's going to town with hundreds of guys.
If I could move, I'd get my gun and put her in the ground.
Yeah.
She can't move.
Oh, he'd kill her?
Kill her?
Yeah, why not?
He's killed her.
Kill
on
himself.
Him. He's killed strange goops.
If he could move.
He can't get his gun.
Could he pull the trigger with his mouth?
For God's sakes, turn.
He's just pleased at the end. For God's sakes, turn around,
so I can
woman.
Shoot you. I don't want to shoot you in the back.
Well, I can't move. And by the way, if I couldn't move, I'd keep my gun on my lap. By the way, I wouldn't keep in the upper shelf of the hall closet. You can't move. You keep your piece on you if you can't move.
At least he can still sing.
All he can do is plead from his chair. Could you please? Can you at least? Could you at least empty my bag before you leave, yeah. Ruby? And don't take your love to town.
But it's nice, like, hope never dies. Like, it's the 101st time.
That's right.
But this time, she's not going to take her love to town if he just sings it.
Right. Oh, boy. We're going to break down Coward of the County next, too. Because I got to tell you, I thought that was depressing. That was the Up With People singers compared to Coward of the County.
How does it get more depressing than a paralyzed veteran whose wife is cheating on him and who can't even shoot her?
That was Katrina and the Waves compared to Coward of the County. All right, I'll tell you what. Do we have Coward of the County? Oh, Jesus Christ.
This is the only way we can keep Norm from getting our $20.
Maybe we should tease it.
All right, let's tease. People don't realize how depressing Kenny Rogers was in his prime.
I only heard The Gambler.
Oh, no, the first edition is all different.
All right, let's take a break. We'll put Blah Blah Blog on the back burner for just a second, the way Norm likes it.
Jeez.
Obsessed with the back burner. Take a quick break. We'll come back and break down the game film from Coward of the County, and then we'll kill ourselves.
And we're back
with more right after this on the Adam Carolla Show.
Hi, I'm Norm McDonald. You're listening to the Adam Carolla Show. It's just like The View, except without four annoying broads.
Norm McDonald in studio. I don't know how we got on to Kenny Rogers. I think we start talking about bad gambling advice, then figured out that Ruby Don't Take Your Love to Town next to Janice Ian 17. Probably the most depressing song. Janice Ian and Kenny Rogers should get together and write a song so we could all kill ourselves to it. But
it would be that Janice Ian would be better if she was attractive at the time she sang the song.
Right.
So it was like, oh, back then.
But. As opposed to the cathartic experience it actually was.
Yeah.
Now, I then said the only more depressing song than Ruby Don't Take Your Love to Town was Coward of the County. And I don't think it can go. Here's what I would say. Coward of the County, like Ruby Don't Take Your Love to Town, is depressing stem to stern, soup to nuts, all the way through, but it doesn't deliver the knockout blow that Coward of the County does in the middle. Now, I don't want to step on it, but it does involve gang rape.
No, it's yes. It comes out like a bolt from the blue.
Yeah, so Coward of the County, again, not as consistently depressing as Ruby Don't Take Your Love to Town, but I would say it delivers a haymaker in the middle of the song and thus is worth a listen. Let's listen to Kenny Rogers and Coward of the County.
Everyone considered him the coward of the county. It never stood one single time to prove the county wrong.
All right. He was known as the
His
coward.
His mama named him Tommy. The folks just called him Yellow.
they wouldn't even use his proper name.
They were reading Tommy wrong.
I'd pick up stakes and move from a county that just knew me as Yellow.
Well, I'm very curious because I have no idea why he's considered a coward.
Oh, we're going to find out what happened.
Well, Yeah. We don't know why.
He was only 10 years old when his daddy died in prison.
His dad died in the joint.
I looked after Tommy because he was my brother's son.
He was his nephew.
Right.
His uncle.
I still recall the final words my brother said to Tommy.
Were they all in prison talking?
Son, my life is over.
Yeah, why was he there?
But yours has just begun.
Mm-hmm.
Promise me, son, not to do the things I've
done. This is Dad talking from his prison bed, right?
His prison deathbed.
Yeah.
The song's about walking away.
Right.
But shouldn't you run away from trouble? If I've learned anything.
He's basically telling him, don't make the mistakes I made. Don't be a tough guy. You'll end up in the joint.
You don't have to be fight to be a man.
Right. All right.
Which is true.
Until.
There's someone for everyone. And Tommy's love was Becky.
Becky knew him as Yellow, too.
In her arms, he didn't have to prove he was a man. One day while he was working, the Gatlin boys came calling.
Gatlin boys are in town.
Already.
They took turns at Becky.
What?
And there was three of them.
Wasn't the Gatlin twins. Had to be three guys that raped her.
Kenny said that so licentiously, like he was almost. Can you play that again? He sounded like.
I can't back it up, but knowing Nod, I was like,
oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Gatlin boys come calling. Right. Bad enough when one guy rapes your best gal, and when twins rape, but when triplets have at it.
I needed some sort of musical heads up that was coming, because it was still kind of.
I drove off the road to a drainage ditch the first time I heard that song. I thought, all right, the guy's Yellow. What'd he do? Yeah. Punch out some bully on a schoolyard? No, three guys gang raped is Becky.
At least they took turns.
Yeah.
It was like all at once.
Evidently, they didn't do it all at once, but it did like
well,
the
let
way.
Me get this straight. What did his father tell him?
It told him not to fight.
Not to fight.
Yeah, you don't have to fight.
Not fight.
To be a man.
Yeah, he didn't make the exception for gang rape?
I don't think his dad in his wildest imagination could have worked the Gatlin boys into the scenario.
Or it could be that his dad, you know, maybe killed somebody that gang raped his wife.
And that's why he was in prison.
That's how he was born.
There was probably like an addendum to his last message right. that he never could get out, which he is in before. Case the Gatlin, unless the Gatlin boys come a-calling.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe he meant like if somebody, you know, calls you Yella.
That's got to be awesome for the town. Hey, the Gatlin boys are back. Awesome. Everyone lock up your daughters.
Yeah. Oh, he's heading over to Yella's house.
Well, does Becky survive?
Well, let's find out. So the Gatlin boys, and I do like the part where Kenny goes,
there was three of them.
It's like he had wood when he said that.
I know.
All right. So the Gatlin, and by the way, what about songs about dogs that have died and you run and shine? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Does every song have to be about you getting bent and paralyzed in Vietnam or gang rape? What's up with Kenny? All right, so anyway, the Gatlin boys came a call in, and they took turns with Becky, and there were three of them. Let's find out what happened.
Tommy opened up the door, saw his Becky crying. The torn dress, the shattered look. Was more than he could stand.
That was Tommy wearing the dress, by the way.
He reached above the fireplace and took down his daddy's picture. As his tears fell on his daddy's face, he heard these words again.
Dad's ghost from prison.
Promise my son not to do the things I've done.
Yeah, but Dad, we didn't work gang rape into the equation,
did
we?
That never came up.
That's not a scenario that we saw coming, did we, Dad? Dad, I feel like you were talking about bar fights.
Yeah.
And by the way, who's going to stop these Gatlin boys next time they come to town?
The Gatlin boys just laughed at him when he walked into the bar.
Sure, that's great rape etiquette.
One of them got up and met him halfway across the floor.
Are you sure this wasn't the work of the Smothers Brothers? Because they can be trouble, too.
There's only two of them.
There's only two? Only two of the Smothers. You wish. It'd be the best rape day of your life if Tommy and the other Smothers brother got to your lady.
That's a good question. I wonder if, because the country community is so tight, I wonder if maybe, did Kenny Rogers consult the Gatlin Brothers before he wrote the song?
Hey, there's a very popular musical group who just had a top 10 album that's called the Gatlin Brothers. Can't we just call them the Smith Brothers? There's no band that's called the Smith Brothers.
Since this song came out, the Gatlin Brothers performances, they're not selling out.
Gladys Knight and the Pips came to town a raping? Like, huh? Couldn't we just pick another name? The Gatlin Brothers in the theater right next to ours in Bray. You understand? This is very uncomfortable.
Yeah. The Gatlin brothers are like, we opened for you, Kenny, that one time.
The Oak Ridge boys came to town, and one of them had a boner. Hey, what the? Come on, Kenny.
You don't hear about the Doobie Brothers are raping?
I know. There's a popular act called the Gatlin Brothers. As a matter of fact, they're going to be in here to cut an album in about 20 minutes. You share the same studio. How about you give them a break? Well, what other names would be good for raping?
ZZ Top's Dirty Rapers. There was three of them.
The Pointer Sisters came to town, and they was mighty horny.
Jackson 5, there's five of them.
Yeah, didn't Kenny's manager like tap him on the shoulder at a certain point and couldn't we pick a non-contemporary in the country music field? Right. Like, it's going to suck.
The Anderson Gang.
Right, like at the next Grammys, you may be sitting next to the Gatlin brothers. This is going to be very uncomfortable.
The Gatlin brothers.
I don't forgive you for Becky.
You rape Becky. Becky's dad stands up, he's drunk, he's got a gun, he charges the stage. All right, Tammy Wynette came to town, and she had a strap on. Okay. All right, where were we? The Gatlin brothers, right?
Yeah.
So now, and by the way, you want to talk about brazen. You know, you just get done gang raping a young gal. Now you go to the bar to tilt a few and celebrate. Here comes the boyfriend of the victim.
You feel you'd maybe have a little shame, a little second thoughts.
Let's go, we'll put a couple coins in the jukebox and let him pick the song.
Yeah, or maybe you buy him a drink.
No, but on the verbal onslaught begins. That's right. You start mocking him. You start laughing at him. The guy was at work while you're raping. What are you supposed to do? He's at the mill and he has a feeling as Becky's being raped.
Well,
so
everyone
runs
in the town calls him Yellow, so the Gatling brothers must know that they can mess with Becky.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. They just showed up.
Where's the law in that town, by the way? The Gatling brothers just get done gang raping Becky. Now they're going to go hoist a few at the local tavern, and they don't even think twice about it?
Deputize somebody.
All right. I guess no means yes in that town. I wonder if it's the same town the paralyzed guy's in. Do you think that's the town
where
Ruby's going to?
Yeah.
Oh, man, Ruby.
Ruby just came to town with Ruby the Gatling brothers.
That would have been better.
That would have been perfect.
Yeah.
Everybody's happy.
The Gatling brothers could have raped Ruby. Right. Having the best day of her life. He wouldn't have had to put her in the ground. All right, well, what happened?
There were three of them.
Turned around, they said, hey, look, old Yellow's leaving. But you could have heard a pin drop when Tommy stopped and locked the door.
Uh-oh.
20 years of crawling was bottled up inside.
And a lot of rage inside.
He wasn't holding nothing back. He let them have it all.
He raped them.
He gave a taste of their own medicine.
Not a Gatling boy was standing.
I guess they weren't.
He said, this one's for Becky. As he watched the last one,
he raped them to death.
I promised your dad not to do the things you've done. I'll walk away from trouble when I can. Now please don't think I'm weak. I didn't turn the other cheek. And Papa, I sure hope you understand. Sometimes you gotta fight when you're a man. Everyone considered him the coward of the county.
Boy, I gotta tell you that Kenny Rogers runs a lot deeper than we give him credit
for.
That's
for sure.
I'd like to pick that guy's brain over a couple of highballs, figure out just what happened.
You have
I wonder
to get
what happened to Yellow after that.
Yeah.
But I tell you one thing, he broke his vow to his deathbed wish of his
with
father.
Dad, yeah.
I bet they didn't call him Yellow after that.
He killed three men. Like you were saying, where's the law in this town?
I like the idea that he just went over and locked the door at the bar, too. By the way, what about the other folks who just wanted to come in and have a beer? Like, hey, what time is it? 2:30 in the afternoon. Whoa, Christ, what day is it? It's Wednesday.
Why
is
the bar line?
The sign, the neon core sign says open. What's going on? Wow, the coward of the county's really opened up a can of whoop-ass on the Gatling brothers.
Well, apparently, we were not carrying sidearms at the time.
No, they were not.
Has anyone seen Becky?
No, she's fine. She's back at the barn crying over the picture.
In a rape shower.
All right.
Yeah, Becky did not report it.
All right, we'll take ourselves a break. Let's just go ahead and flip over all the cards and declare Norm MacDonald the winner in blah, blah, blah. I'll give him 20.
Here you go.
That'll go right to his offshore account so we can continue his addiction. Why don't you tease the news? And then we'll break down, just walked in to see what condition my condition was in by, what the hell was that? I swear to God, we could play the weirdest of all the Kenny Rogers songs next if you kill.
What is
if
that?
You, he was in the first edition.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Kenny Rogers, before he went country, went psychedelic drug.
Yeah, yeah.
He had a
television show.
People don't realize him with the first edition. All right, I'll tell you what. Tease the news, and then I'll go get that song. We'll play that Kenny Rogers song.
We're going to talk a little bit about Barack Obama and what condition his condition is in.
Ultimately, I don't find complaining about the refs all that useful.
And then I will complete the trilogy and our Kenny Rogers weekend with Norm MacDonald and play the weirdest, druggiest song that not only Kenny Rogers has ever done, that has ever been penned, that has ever been written. This is the druggiest song ever, and we'll do it next on The Adam Carolla Show.
me. Slow and softly make me.
This is the Adam Carolla Show.
Engineering, are we go for recording?
No, Adam has not put on his gear.
Local time, don't go.
As field commander, I cannot confidently say that we are ready.
That is a no-go.
And we're back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, Norm MacDonald here is going to be at the Brea Improv this weekend. That is Thursday through Sunday. Norm hanging in with us. T, one more Kenny Rogers song to get to before we get to the news. And you want to talk about range. So Kenny talked about being
Silver.
Being Jack Silver, program director, driving into oncoming traffic on the way into the station. Kenny, first he did the song about Ruby going into town and having sex with strangers because his legs were bent and paralyzed. Then we do the Coward of the County. Now, you won't believe that the same guy who did Coward of the County also did this song, but Kenny went through a very... He went through. Do you know this song?
No, I don't.
Oh, you will recognize it when I play it for you. Went through a very groovy 60s phase, and this had to be the grooviest, druggiest. What happened really was is... I think the Beatles came out with Sgt. Pepper's.
Yeah.
And everyone said, wow, this is crazy, groovy, sitar-driven music. It's all songs about dropping LSD and checking out and all that kind of stuff. So we must jump on the Sgt. Pepper's bandwagon. Right, right. And that's what Kenny and his Kenny Rogers in his first edition did with this song. Again, same guy who just sung Coward of the County. Is your mind blown wow. yet?
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
She's prominently in the Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
I woke up this morning with the sun down shining in.
Same guy.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
That's glue, right?
Freak out, right?
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Tore his mind on a jagged sky.
To see what condition my condition was in.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
Recorded this the same session he did Coward with the County. What a druggy, weird, derivative.
In a deep, dark hole, and then I followed it in.
Doesn't sound like a fun trip.
No.
Myself crawling out as I was crawling in.
Now, anytime you push your soul in a hole, that's a bad trip.
So tight, I couldn't unwind. I saw so much. I broke my mind.
Broke his mind.
I just yeah. dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Bob Dylan's phone, I'm going, we might want to cut down a little on this.
Drug references.
It's yeah. a little confusing.
Bob Dylan did not understand this song.
Kind of hard to follow. Is this like the quintessential 60s drug song?
Yeah.
It's worse than that. It's a knockoff.
Yeah. Oh, but it goes deeper.
Yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
Someone painted April Fool and put black letters on a dead end sign.
It's great to get behind the wheel when you're yeah, hallucinating.
I got no fear. 8 miles straight up downtown somewhere. I just dropped in to see what condition my condition is.
And has a huge ending.
I said I just dropped in to see what condition my condition is in.
Yeah, oh yeah.
That's bizarre.
Wait a minute, we're not done with this acid trip, Norm. Kenny Rogers.
Later, Hosen.
Coward of the County wrote that baby.
I'm still concerned about what condition Becky's condition is in.
Freak out. She's in a mental hospital in the same town Ruby went to.
I wonder if Kenny Rogers, when he's doing like Lady and the Islands in the Stream, if he tries to get the stuff like, you know, hidden.
Right. Yeah, like, I think he's exorcised all his demons.
All right, I'm just saying, look, people say what you want about, you know, Nirvana, Kurt Cobain, guys like that, but their stuff all sounded about the same. Who had more range than Kenny Rogers?
Between Islands in the Stream and The Coward of the County.
He would just sit down on the piano and go, let's see, what should I write about? A peyote trip? Gang rape? Vietnam vet? Islands in the Stream? I don't know.
He did have a lot of range.
A lot of range.
Is this also the guy that opened up the Roasters?
Yes. Or maybe I'll bro some chicken. I'll tell you what. Instead of penning another number one song, I'm going to go bro some chicken and think about my next topic. Again, I have it narrow. Wait a minute. Maybe I'll combine some of my muses and some of my loves. Guy drops acid.
Yeah.
Goes into town.
Right.
Hangs out with the Dalton boys. Gang rapes that yeller guy's girlfriend over there. Then goes back and shoots that Vietnam vet. Huh? On an island. It's in a stream. By the way, how good an island could that be if it's in a stream?
That's true.
You can't build a resort or golf course
That's a tiny island.
It's a horrible island.
That's not an island.
Yeah.
That's a
fat guy goes wading and your island gets covered in water. It's a horrible island to be in.
An island in a stream would be.
Yeah. Should have said island in, you know, I mean, an island like, you know, the Baltic Sea or the Pacific or the Atlantic, almost any place better than a stream.
It's a metaphor.
It's a metaphor.
But when it rains, you have no more island.
Yeah, that is what we are. It's actually, it's a metaphor. Islands in the stream.
We're islands
in
a stream. Islands, though.
Does he say that is what we are?
Yeah,
no more.
I guess it's a metaphor.
He says nothing in between, but he said islands, plural.
There are two islands
in the stream.
There's water in the stream.
Of course there's water. How are you going to get through the water?
This whole thing's effed
up. I got to talk. Hey, get Kenny on the phone, would you, Ange?
He can
talk to him about this.
He's on the phone. You know, remember when he went on the phone with the girl from The Price is Right? Yeah. There's a sex tape phone.
Oh, really?
Between him and the girl from The Price is Right.
Vanna White?
If you can get it, it's really... No, I know. Yeah, The Price is Right.
Okay, so that's Wheel of Fortune.
But you got to get that. It's really funny because he's talking and he's like, my son's in the next room. I got to talk quiet. He has phone sex with the girl from The Price is Right.
And he has trouble distinguishing life from art. So he's like, listen, I'm in a wheelchair right now just outside of town.
My legs are bent.
Hey, you don't want me to put you in the ground, do you?
Don't go to town.
All right. T.
Yep.
It was good he would bury her after.
Right. Just dropped in to find out what condition his junk was in.
Well, if you just leave her out and dead, the Gatling brothers could come.
That's
and there's
right.
no telling. There's
they
three of them.
They don't care if she's dead.
That's the way they roll. By the way, the Gatling parents did a horrible job with those triplets.
I mean, three gang rapists? One of them couldn't turn out to be the sheriff?
And where do you think they were? Why do you think they left town in the first place? I mean,
they
went on a Mormon mission, I'll tell you that right now. Probably opening a small business, one would think. Yeah.
Or they just scour the county, you know, looking for a yeller guy.
Maybe they went to another town where they heard there was a yeller guy and they raped his girl.
This town's going to be the best. This guy's so yellow. They call him yellow.
That's right. It's not Tommy. It doesn't say yellow on his birth certificate. All right, T.
Yep.
The news.
Teresa Strasser with tomorrow's news. Today.
All right, that was Norm MacDonald on The Adam Carolla Show. Early morning on KLSX back in 2008. God, those guys are just... They're too good together, Gio. They're too good.
They have to do that show. It has to be a YouTube show where Adam teaches Norm to drive. It would be such a hit. It's crazy.
Well, that'll do it for Carolla Classics. Thanks again for hanging out with us on this lovely Sunday. The Adam Carolla Show returns tomorrow with Fitz Dog sitting in all day. Till then, my name's Chris Loxamana. That's Super Fan Giovanni.
Mahalo and get on.